put the introduction back on here. This is the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is an interview with Herbert Leung, taking place on January 14, 1981 at his office. This is tape two. Okay, when people in your family got sick, was Chinese medicine used or Western medicine?
Oh, my mother used to cook a lot of those herbs. Because there was an herbalist store right on 9th. I can't remember exactly where it was. Because I know there was one on 9th, 10th Street later, but it was on San Pedro Street, the area. I can't recall where it was exactly. Yes, my mother used to boil everything.
So what kinds of cures were, or why would she use Chinese herbs for what kinds of purposes?
Well, most of the time we had colds. That's general, you know, the illness is temporary, fevers, and you get the pills, you used to get the bitter tea, and
you all took it without it.
Well,
without
that,
any fuss.
This was it. And then, of course, once in a while we used castor oil.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's a combination, but a lot of times we did use a lot of Chinese herbs. And also the yak choy, you know, for the squirrels and beef and, you know, everything else.
So she used the herbs for cooking, too.
Well, we bought some at the herb store.
Uh-huh.
Bought all the stuff and they stored in the pot.
Did you also use Western medicine?
Well, the castor oil. You know, drug, you know, what they call the non-prescription medicine.
Because
I don't recall ever going to a doctor, but every time it's a cold, took care of the cold. You had a fever, you know, in bed a lot, very little time for that. So all our meals are usually taken care of at home. I don't think anybody ever broke a leg or anything. They had to go to the hospital and have a physician. My sister had an operation once. They had to, you know, a doctor care. But other than that, I had to keep quiet.
Do you use any herbs at all, or has that carried on?
I haven't used any. I did for a while, once, my brother-in-law, he's my sister Rose. I used to tell him to get me some herb once in a while because he's down in Chinatown. And he's pretty involved with the Chinese. He's by the Yak Choy Pill. Not now. We use both the American ones.
You don't go see Chinese doctors, right? Do you use any of the over-the-counter type of Chinese medicines, of the oils and...
This is Mongimu.
Right.
Tiger balm.
Right.
I use that, and maybe the UIU some once in a while. What else? It has an IQ. I still have that. I've got a jar and bottle of it. That's the only food I can remember. They're very good.
Okay. Did you speak Toi San Ma or English with your children?
English.
No Toi San Ma at all?
Well, we say if we teach them in our field. All three of the children took some Chinese, or Cantonese. The oldest boy took a few years of it, two or three. My daughter took some. Then she went to college. She took a year of Mandarin. She went back to Taiwan. The youngest took a little bit of Cantonese, the least of all of them. Then when he went to SC, he took 2 years of Mandarin. That's pretty good at it. I don't know, maybe he got most of it.
They all did this voluntarily, no pressure from you or your wife?
Well, no,
the
Cantonese, we sent them.
Oh, you sent them? This is Chinese school?
Yeah, in Crenshaw area, the church.
How many years did they go?
The oldest one, a couple of years, I think. Then he got pretty good. He was writing letters to my mother-in-law, who spent
speak very little English, grumpy Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Like my wife's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Louise's mother.
But then they couldn't keep it up.
Well, you know, kids, when they get to school with their peers, and they see what a, you know, when you live in Crenshaw, very few Chinese up there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they went to Sunday school, you know, their church, but, you know, during the week, there are a lot of people at the church weren't in the same grade or same school or classes, so most of their peers were non-Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese.
Mm-hmm. But you spoke English at home, too, with them, so it's natural for them to want to speak English.
Well, because, you know, Louise and I never spoke anything but English to ourselves. But like I say, Louise, when she started school, she didn't understand a word of English. Because she was from, mother spoke only Chinese.
Louise is your wife,
yeah.
Right? Uh-huh.
So when she first started school in San Diego, she was not an English speaker, or limited English speaker.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't even understand English, she said.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay. Do you think that, did American-born Chinese of your generation feel that it was important to send their children to Chinese school?
We feel it's important, but the kids, it's very difficult. The kids, but now, all three of our children, two of them still go to school, one full-time and one a little bit down the dock. You know, they because our values are Chinese too. You know, at home we're proud of Chinese. We talk about the Chinese values and we talk about this, you know, so. And they see that a lot of the things which are going on here, and we say the Chinese, you know, have respect for this and this and the parents and all that. And the laws are, the person who's being offended, you know, is not the one that has to stand trial. We're just saying things. And other things about Chinese, you know, we've done this and that, we've invented printing and all that, you know. Chinese New Year is good because we have a lot of good values, and
mm-hmm.
you're supposed to pay your debts and clean your house and
mm-hmm.
everything else, and say good things and all that, you know. So, our kids appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And, because we try to practice a lot of things of, you know, the Chinese, the respect and everything, and all the people coming off with them, they can be all that deficit and all that. And so, well, the other people do it too, but you know, with the Chinese, they always ask, have you eaten here, you know, you come in the house, but, you know, people, you go to the other people's house, they just come on in and talk to them. It's like, there are a lot of good things about Chinese, they're looking out, see you're, you know, you're not really not. But like Corky, you know, the youngest, he's so much involved in his graduate program that he just, you know, stopped taking the Chinese. And Marcia, after he's working now with the fiance, and you know, she's not going to learn Chinese. But she likes to, because a lot of times when Louise and I say something, she says, I know you're talking about me. Louise said, what are you doing? I don't know.
Does Louise also speak Khoisanhua?
Yeah, she's Cantonese too.
Uh-huh.
But I can't speak Cantonese that well. Very few. Like Louise says, I butcher it. I get too much. I get pulled back to Khoisanhua. 99% of the time.
When did you and Louise get married?
49, I guess.
49. Uh-huh. Did you meet in Los Angeles?
San Diego. We took our Chinese basketball team down there, played a Chinese basketball team down there. After the war, yeah, I tell you, I was involved with the Chinese league.
Right.
We took our team down there. And they had a social after that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Did your parents write to your relatives and friends in China?
Probably my father did, because like I say, I was too young. My father was very... I saw a lot of the stuff that he used to write. You know, we used to have a big cabinet, a lot of Chinese books, only a lot of Chinese books.
Mm-hmm.
He used to go all the way up to the father and all that stuff, a lot of his business things, you know. look at, you know. But he wrote, he had a good Chinese hand. I mean, he was very educated Chinese, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
My mother could read and write, but to what extent, I don't know. But she speaks, you know, she spoke Chinese, both Cantonese and Khoisan.
Do you know whether they sent any money back to support any friends or relatives?
Probably my father did, because back in the village he had some brother, you know, siblings and a lot of relatives. Like I said, he bought a property, you know, he owned property over there. Now, whether, I don't know what the status of all those things are now.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, you know, they have records in the village or anything. But,
and did any of your brothers or sisters send any money back to support anybody or to support the oldest brother who was in China for 3 years?
No, my oldest brother's here, but he was married back there, you know. I don't know how or why, but they say he was sending money back to, until his wife passed away, and to his son. His son didn't want to come over here, you know, because I guess he got stuck over there when the communists took over and couldn't get away. They were trying to extort a lot of money from him. More than what he was saying that I was, you know.
Mm.
But he didn't send, he knew that whether my son suffered from that, I mean, his son suffered from that.
So your nephew is still in Sunway?
I think he's in Canton. I think I don't know exactly.
Uh-huh.
So that's the source spot. I don't speak too much. Get him over there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did your mother join any of the family associations in Chinatown?
No. Because Lola, you know, single. The Liao don't have association up here, just a Sunway.
Uh-huh.
You know, the, no, I live in Sunway. Right over there by the Far East Bank, or East-West Federal City, right there. I think it was one of those associations.
Mm-hmm.
Only, so my father probably joined a lot of associations. He was very active in the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my mother was what you call, you know, housewife. You know, the traditional Chinese housewife would never, you know, got out of the house, so it was very difficult for her to get involved in a lot of things. You know, just her little world right there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the other housewives, the wives of other Chinese merchants.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did you join any associations or clubs or organizations in Chinatown besides the athletic organizations?
You mean as a kid or as an adult?
As a kid.
No, because all our world was down 9th Street.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinatown was like, you know, a lot of guys, you know, it's really like a, like, you know, this is your territory and that territory. You know, it was a competition. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes Chinatown guys don't like, in the old days, the outsiders coming in.
Because
mm-hmm. I remember when I was older, I you know, heard about it. In the early days, I never did go to Chinatown for reason except to go shopping with my mother, except to my streetcar. But after I grew, when I got out of high school, got a car, I was up there a lot, but not, well, I knew some of the people. But in fact, I still know some of the people still around, you know, to this day, you know, my elders, our elders, your elders.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still up there, around, not
mm-hmm.
directly or some indirectly in Chinatown. I made a lot of friends, not a lot, but some friends of Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
After that high school.
Mm-hmm.
But not as, you know, just more social, but not, you know, involved in activities or going out or even
mm-hmm.
or clubs. Our clubs, people were down there. After that high school, the club thing, you know, just went by the boards, they say, because I went out to work. Because when you got out of high school, you had to go to school. At that time, because of our family, because of our circumstance, father, you know, he left us a lot of things, but then by the time, you know, 1927, when he passed in 1940, a lot of our finances, you know, were pretty dry, our family, in fact, dry.
Mm-hmm.
So I either had to go out of work or go to school, and I felt that the thing most necessary to go to work. I worked in right down the community, right by the market. I could have worked in the market, which I did later, too.
What kind of work did you do?
I worked in a gas station first.
Uh-huh.
And for a year with Japanese, and then later on I worked in the market. Then I started going, I enrolled in a class at LACC just before the war started that semester. I worked in a produce market for about a year.
A Chinese produce market?
Yeah, both Chinese. One on the 7th Street Market, Wong Kim, and then seasoned produce is what owned by Chinese, still owned by, well, it's a combination of Chinese, Japanese, and Caucasian now. Mm-hmm. It was Chinese at that time.
Mm-hmm. And then you said you went into the service?
I went into the service.
Which branch of the service?
The Air Force.
Air Force. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, I enlisted.
Uh-huh. Okay. Which were the most important families in Los Angeles before World War II?
Well, I think in our world, you know, the people who were in business, you know, of course we had the attorney. My mother used to talk about Y.C. Holmes, you know, and also Louis Kwan, you know, Louis Produce, before Dan Louis, his brother, I think it was Dan Louis' brother, owned the place, you know, was the founder of the market. There's quite a few. There's, I can't think of this.
I just can't think of the names right now, but there were some, you know, in the restaurant business. Jin Hing was in jewelry then.
Who was that?
Jin Hing, the jewelry, you know, right behind Hong Kong Lao.
Uh-huh.
He was there then, the father, Bob Lee's father.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be on Los Angeles Street there. We went up there. And, I'm trying to think of the guy that owned that the restaurant there. Of course, you know, Gilbert Leung's parents. Of course, you know, they're long, so they used to live right down there.
Mm-hmm.
So Gilbert may not remember, but when my father passed away, the family wanted to adopt me as one of their sons.
The Gilbert Leung's family?
His mother and father. But I don't know if Gilbert knew about it, because at that time my mother was saddled with 7 kids.
Right.
So they want to take off the hand, you know, I guess. I don't know what the reason was, but I remember my mother talking about it. That Su Jiu Lao, they had a Su Chow restaurant, which was one of the, you know, the places at that time. Right on Los Angeles Street, I don't guess.
But your mother said it was out of the question.
No, huh? She wasn't even there. Even as poor as we were, or something, whatever.
That's good.
And, well, you know, it makes you feel good when you think back, you know, when I think about it now.
Which... What number were you in there?
I'm the youngest boy.
The youngest boy.
At number 5.
Uh-huh.
Number 4, so.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, I can't think of all the people, but, you know, we're talking about way back, and most of the people are market people. So the biggest one, you know, like Louis Kwan. And of course, my father's business really was the same size as Louis Produce, except that, you know, I guess if he would have stayed living for another 5 years until my older brother became of age and would run the business, we might have, you know, something different would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because Louis Produce was only a two-door place like ours. And then it's right toward World War II.
Do you know a Judy Takata Hawkins?
Yeah, she's over your place. Judy Takata Hawkins at Agents.
Oh.
Is she over there?
I don't know the name.
Yeah, she's with Paul Asian Studies Center, actually.
Okay, put me on the line
here. Oh, excuse me.
She's at, what's her number? 879-3596. That's the LA number.
879-3576.
And the toll number is 825-2974 or 5.
Right.
Oh, right there.
Yeah.
That's the LA number.
Okay.
That's a toll-free number.
Okay.
They don't give that one out.
Okay. What kinds of jobs were most Chinese engaged in before the war?
Well, of course, the market over there. And restaurant and laundry. Those are the three big areas.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, maybe a few of us, like myself, went to the gas station. And some were, you know, working. Some were fortunate to become engineers, very limited. But most of them were in the main fields. Actually, there weren't that many Chinese when you get right down. You see, the world was big when you're small. When you talk about, when you take the population count of, you know, the census in 1940, and there's 239,000 Chinese in the United States. I think this included Hawaii at that time. LA wasn't that big. Maybe we had about, people always talk about 10,000. I don't think there were that many. Maybe about 5,000 in Los Angeles area before World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And we scattered them out, Chinatown, 9th Street, and then the 20th Street area, the three main areas, and a few other, maybe Lincoln Heights, you know, spread out that way. You know, you don't have that many.
Mm-hmm.
And in 5,000, you're talking about working adults and housewives, you know, Chinese, you know, the women that work. So you got a workforce of what? Maybe 1,000 or less.
Yeah.
So, and the women, a lot of them worked in the restaurants, waitresses, and some as clerical. But seamstress, you know, they had someone factory.
Mm-hmm.
And,
in the non-Chinese community, what kinds of jobs were open to Chinese before the war? I know opportunities were limited for women. You were saying perhaps waitressing, working in department stores.
Department stores. I look back.
For men too.
Most, you see, a lot of Chinese. See, the bulk of the Chinese, or the large percentage of Chinese, worked in businesses were Chinese. Either their own business, or somebody who was a Chinese entrepreneur, a restaurant, a laundry, a grocery store, or the produce market, which is two produce markets. And so, you know, if you take half of the people, you know, half, some are men and some are women, most of the men are working in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
So very little is outside. If you're really working, the more like shipping clerks or in the warehousing or something like that, driving a truck, maybe very limited.
Mm-hmm.
Most of your truck drivers are non-Chinese. Unless you drove a truck for your own business, like the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about very limited. You always get somebody who's like, you know, you get a Y.C. Holmes attorney, but who does he serve most? Most of the clients are Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you didn't get anybody who's a judge, you didn't get anybody who's a, you get very few, like insurance, you get the Albert Ng, you know, who's a, and Louis Yon, the late Louis Yon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's very few. I mean, you're talking about, sure, you have to have somebody who can serve the Chinese in those areas, but when you get to a broad field selling insurance, you're not going to be accepted most of the time. Oh, you get a few clients, like Albert Lee probably get a few non-Chinese clients, but not, you get to depend on it by starting there.
Right. What was an average income before the war?
$15 a week, $25 a week.
And this was
1930s? 30s. 30s. You get further back, you get, the people were working, you know, when the Depression came, you know, there was a lot of competition for in the mid-30s, you know, Roosevelt, before, even when he was there.
Mm-hmm.
So we were working, you know, we were lucky, you know, when I got my first job, I was paying $15 a week.
That was at the gas station?
I worked for a Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I knew that some of the other gas stations, of course, you're out of high school, you're first starting, you're not going to get the top wages. But I learned, you know, I was very appreciative of the fact that I got to learn. It was then I learned my automotive skills.
Mm-hmm.
So later on, I got a little, but I quit after the first year to go to the market because the market was giving me, I went to another gas station. I went to another, worked for Chinese,
mm-hmm.
Adam San Pedro Street. CFO, you know, Henry Ong.
Henry Ong, uh-huh.
You should interview him. He's been here a long time. He's older than I am. He went to Chinese school all those times. He went back to China. And Abraham Chin, Wen Zhong, but his father was the president of one of the Tongs. And he's telling me a story about the time that the Tong War, his father had a guard up there standing in front of his house because he's the president of the Tong.
Oh.
Yeah, Abraham Chin.
Abraham.
Abe Chin. Abe Chin. He's one of the bosses at CFO and Adam San Pedro. So you might, you know, get, at least get a little bit of the workings if he can relate that much about his father, you know. Because his father was, you know, even though he's kind of Bun Chung, you know, his mother was black and Chinese. He went to Chinese school.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them, Howard, George. George is telling you stories about he's going to Chinatown down here, the old Chinatown,
mm-hmm.
back in the train station.
Mm-hmm.
He used to throw rocks over the fence at either the Italians or the Chinatown. One day he got hit on the head with a rock.
So it was that kind of a thing too.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay, so if you were saying you made about $15 a week
to begin, some people were getting 25. I remember because we found out that. The Japanese gas station, I found out that a lot of the workers were getting $25 a week.
Uh-huh.
For about 12 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
See, in those days, it wasn't that.
You think it was that the minorities were paying less, as they seemed to in certain areas?
Well, they said the market was the people getting paid around $25 a week.
Uh-huh.
Then right before the war, I went over to the CFO, got $40 a week. So then I went to, after that, I went to the market and I said, no, I'll make it a little bit less, about 25, 30. Then went to the market, you got $40 a week. Just before World War II. Then I also enrolled in night class over at LACC because this was when the time was when the draft started before World War II. If people were going into the defense industry, and I found out they were making more money, and I thought a lot of things were opening up, so I thought I'd start going back to school to learn something, you know. Maybe engineering or something.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the beginning of this, because then the war broke out before I could really get this speed.
Mm-hmm. And how did your income compare with expenses? Was there money left over to save? Was it just enough?
You know how young kids are, young guys. You spend all you made.
So, okay.
And I charged some things. Especially at the gas station I was working, I bought a car, and I had to buy parts, tires, and I charged most of it because I didn't have all that money. You work at that wage, you don't save too much.
Did you have to support your mother?
No, she was working in a menial. She was doing some work, you know, very menial jobs in the downtown.
But she never made it a policy or asked her children to contribute or give her money or uh-huh. Okay.
No. You should say no.
No, right. Okay. People who did save money, did they save the cash at home or did they save in banks? What was the
I couldn't tell you the you know about everybody. I guess you know I suspect a lot of the Chinese kept a lot of cash at home.
And why was that?
Well, you know, some people just feel more secure. They have the wealth by their side, probably, because, you know, Chinese, well, many of the minorities live, you know, they're very low socioeconomic and suffer a lot of hardship, and a lot of times what they earn, you know, this is their property, and this is something, you know, it's kind of manifestation of a security or, you know, whatever.
They're just afraid to have it taken away from them, too,
well,
I suppose.
Maybe a lot of it, well, you see, the thing is, I don't know how much they relate with the past in early California, because a lot of people still probably felt the injustices and some of the things that were heaped upon the Chinese, but, who knows? Because I was never, you know, in that position, so I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that a lot of times, some of the times, I went over to some of the people's house when, at some time or the other, when they had a lot of money. You know, there's, you know, my mother went to visit, and somehow they went to get money. You know, but, you know, in those days, I guess you wouldn't do it with the visitors, but they would bring off, you know, the money to give to the kids, get something, go to the store. You know,
mm-hmm.
quite a bit. I mean, think of it. Well, you know, Chinese also invested a lot in jewelry. You know, a lot in those days, of course, jade and gold. Nobody thought anything. You know, Chinese gold is being very almost pure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I know that Chinese did spend a lot of their earnings on gold. A lot of the children, the daughters, a lot of people have necklaces, you know, with jade, and the Chinese gold bracelets with gold on it, and jade, and rings. People didn't think much of it. Today, you know, there's a lot of difference.
That's right. Okay. Did you know, were there many people involved in gambling amongst the Chinese?
Oh, definitely. They go down the, as I recall, there are 4 or 5 restaurants on San Pedro, plus the parlor on the side street. The back rooms of a lot of restaurants, just openly, they're playing cards or mahjong, da mahjong, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And even zhongqiu. My mother used to talk about the so-and-so zhongqiu. They won so many dollars, you know, hundreds of dollars, big money. Then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hits the gig of G, I don't know how many words, you know, they picked up. I don't know how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the people used to tell me, because I used to go to this Chinese herb store on San Julian Street, at the block west of San Pedro. The man used to tell me to pick out some of the words, and he would mark them on a piece of paper. And then, he said, for good luck. Sometimes, you know, next day, the man would give me a nickel. I don't know what for. Maybe he hit something. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Never tell you.
Okay. Did you know of any Chinese who were involved in politics?